and make your, you know, tell your side. But we're going to let you mute right now.
Okay, well, do you mind if I listen in?
Sure.
To hear what he says? Because I'm very upset about
the show starting.
Has created the longest
Thank
economic
you.
Expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.
Welcome to the Kudzu Vine for the first Sunday in March. Welcome, Catherine. Welcome, Tim.
Good evening.
Hello, everyone.
Excellent. Well, the Kudzu Vine's shaping up. We've already started booking guests for next week, but let's just make sure Catherine and Tim, since y'all are running the board, at this point, let's just have the three of us for this time and mute anyone else at this point. But this is going to be a big show. Our featured guest is going to be a congressional candidate, one of the two congressional candidates from Mississippi, Congressional District 1, I believe. I'm not in front of a map, so I may get my facts wrong. The third congressional district. You know, I don't know if y'all watch PTI and they have errors or fact check or something. Man, I'm going to be air-filled tonight without working with my computer and my notes. I'm in a van in the dark. But we're going to have one of the congressional candidates. And next week we may have the other candidate, but Randy Eads is going to come on with us. Also, we may have a special challenge happen on our show. That will happen at the first part of the hour, and I won't give any more away for that. And then finally, I believe someone from the Bill Gillespie campaign, possibly Bill Gillespie himself or one of his key staffers, may call in and talk to us a little bit about Jack Kingston appearance on Bill Maher. Plus, there's been a lot of topics in Georgia politics. Catherine, I believe you went to the Georgia Democratic Women's big event for the spring. Tell us a little about that. And, of course, Tim, let us know if that challenge comes in on the phones.
All righty.
Yeah, and Tim, my interface is not working, so you're on your own.
Okay, thanks.
I went down to Warner Robins with Paige Gleason yesterday for the Georgia Federation of Democratic Women spring pep rally, and it was great. There were about 100 people, mostly women, but there were a few guys there too, including Josh Lanier and Maggie Martinez, candidates for the U.S. Senate in Georgia. And we got a report from Mary Long about the DNC. The DNC's all a Twitter because of the superdelegate, so she filled us in a little bit about that. And then we had Angela, who's the Southern Georgia, I don't know exactly what her title is, but field operations for the Democratic Party of Georgia. And Jane Kidd was there for a few minutes. She was there for most of the time. She had to cut out because her mother was celebrating her birthday yesterday. But it was fun. We had Democratic cheers. We were led in cheers by one of our members, and we all had little pom-poms and horns and a nice little buffet lunch. It was really quite fun, and it was nice to hear from both Josh Lanier and Maggie Martinez. They each spoke individually, and it wasn't like a debate. And we also heard from Elena, who's the Women's Caucus representative for the Young Democrats of Georgia. So it was a lively group and a lively afternoon, and we really enjoyed it. It's always nice to be in a room full of Democrats, and I was, frankly, I was surprised when we pulled into the parking lot and it was full. I was like, are all these people here for this? And sure enough, they were. So it was quite fun.
Yes. Well, that does sound like a good event. Surprised more of the candidates didn't come to that event, not only Senate candidates, but also some congressional races are starting to shape up. If I'm not mistaken, I believe after some calls I got this week, we're down to one district without a candidate, that being Woodland Westmoreland's district. That's the third. I know the third and the eighth changed numbers recently, so that's the
only
district.
I don't know for sure, but in the fall, we had Rand Knight and Dale Cardwell at the meeting, so it's possible that they just decided. We had invited Mr. Jones in the fall, and I assume he was invited yesterday as well. So it may have been that we just didn't want to, fill up the day with the Senate candidates.
That makes sense.
I wasn't on the planning committee.
So we need to tell everybody that Mr. Knight and Mr. Cardwell have done their part by coming to those Democratic women, and it only Mr. Jones. I think we got a call.
If I could jump in, I believe we might have Dale Cardwell hang on here.
Okay, well, Tim's got caller ID.
You? Hey, guys, how are you?
Good, how are you, Dale?
I'm great.
Hey, Dale, thanks for coming in. You had requested this time. You just had a press release this morning. Tell us what you got.
Absolutely. You know, I frankly decided it was time that I needed to call Vernon Jones out. He's going around the state claiming that he's the best nominee for the party because of his record of leading DeKalb County. And I frankly know probably more about Vernon Jones' record in DeKalb County than anyone, simply because as an investigative reporter, it was my job to cover DeKalb County as well as many other counties. And I'm ready to debate Vernon about his record as the CEO of DeKalb County, as well as to compare his record to my record. And I do have a record. I have a record of refusing to take bribes to stop stories. I have a record of fighting for people, certainly fighting for a lot of people who were harmed by Vernon Jones as the CEO of DeKalb County. And I'm excited about going toe-to-toe with him and talking about those things.
Okay, so you're challenging Vernon Jones to a debate. This is not a debate across the spectrum. This is a debate just about DeKalb issues and records related to DeKalb. Is that correct?
Well, frankly, I'd be happy to talk with him about all the issues that are relevant to being a United States senator. But because Vernon says that his unique qualification as senator is how he's managed DeKalb County for 7 years, I think it's relevant to tell people some of the things that the mainstream media just refuse to talk about. The fact that Vernon Jones has gone through 5 police chiefs, and Vernon forced Eddie Moody to retire as the police chief because he told the grand jury the truth that Vernon had created an $800,000 security detail for himself. And then he wanted Eddie Moody to fabricate a story to the grand jury and say that Vernon didn't do it, that Eddie Moody did it. You know, those are some of the facts that the people of the state need to know, because Vernon does indeed have a long record in DeKalb County. He's proudest of his accomplishments establishing a green space program. But what the statewide voters do not know is that Vernon has exploited that green space program and made some developers very, very wealthy and used it to political advantage and has actually personally profited from the green space program. Those are things that people need to know.
Yes. Well, where would this debate take place?
Well, in the news release that I sent out, I'm inviting Vernon to choose the place and the time. You know, I think if he wants to fit it into his schedule, then it will be harder for him to say he doesn't have time to debate. So I've basically said I'd like him to name the place and the time, and I'd like to exchange direct conversation with Vernon where I ask him questions about his record. He asked me questions about my record, and that we just basically put it on the table and let the people decide what they think. And I'd love to do it within a month, certainly. I'd like to do it in the month of March if we could.
Yes. Well, Tim or Catherine, any questions to follow up on this?
Have you heard from him?
No, I have not. I announced it last night at the Democratic banquet, and we had a good group there, about 250 people, hardcore Democrats that are very concerned and passionate about Democratic politics and concerned, frankly, about the direction of DeKalb County. And so I announced it there. I believe the AJC has posted it today, and I'll certainly wait to hear from him, and I'll probably send him an email tomorrow morning if I don't hear anything, certainly by tonight.
Dale, have you heard from any of the other candidates in the race about this?
I haven't, Tim. And, you know, and I would invite all of the candidates to debate the issues about the United States Senate race. The specific issues about Vernon's leadership in DeKalb County, I really don't think the other candidates, and this is not an attack on them, it would not be their place to be very familiar with Vernon's record as the DeKalb CEO. And so in that manner, they're welcome to come, but I don't think that they have the breadth of knowledge about Vernon's record that I do. I think that someone needs to debate Vernon about his record if that's what he claims makes him qualified. You know, in my press release, Tim, I think this is very, very important. I said that We Democrats indeed have a big tent, but nothing in the party's bylaws requires us to accept a Republican in donkey clothing who's trying to disrupt our primary and kill our chances of replacing Saxby Chambliss in Washington. As you all very well know, Vernon acknowledged on your show that he voted for George W. Bush not once, but twice. And there have been a lot of conversations, and Creative Loafing published a story saying that they believed, there were sources that believed that Vernon Jones is running as a spoiler in the DeKalb, or rather in the Democratic primary. I have no problem at all with Vernon running for Senate. I simply think he ought to be running in the right primary.
Okay.
Which is the Republican primary. If the man voted for George W. Bush, sounds to me like he's a Republican.
Okay. David?
Yes, well, and also, I guess, looking at the Senate race, there was an endorsement, which kind of seemed early in the race, but Rand Knight got one of the largest union endorsements this week. Any thoughts on that, Dale?
Yeah, actually, I congratulate Rand. Rand has really been working hard, and he's gone to see a lot of union leaders, and good for Rand, you know, and I would simply ask the unions, the Teamsters, and to at least bring us before a board, at least give us an opportunity to talk about our positions. As you guys know, I'm the son of a UMWA coal miner. I know what it's like to be out on strike. I know what it's like not to get Christmas presents because you've been on strike for 3 months. Don't think Rand's been there. I know what it's like to fight for striking union members because as a journalist for 23 years, I was almost always the only voice in 5 newsrooms across the South who would insist that we would go out and cover those issues. When those union members were fighting for better benefits or for a marginally higher pay, I'm the guy that put my job on the line and said, folks, this is right. We've got to go out and give those people an opportunity to state their positions. I fought for them my entire professional career, and so all I would ask is an honest, fair shake when it comes time to going before a board and talking about our union credentials and, you know, and what we want to do for the working families.
Yes, and now when you met with the Teamsters board, because I know usually these things are done through an endorsement board, all the candidates sit in front of them, how did that go?
Actually, David, I was never invited to go before the Teamsters board. I had no idea this endorsement was coming out until my phone lit up on Thursday and people were saying, Dale, you're not going to believe this, but we're hearing that the Teamsters Local 728 was going to endorse another candidate. And I thought they were teasing me because certainly I had not been contacted by the Teamsters and had not had an opportunity to discuss the issues with a board. And apparently this is just kind of like out of left field. And I did place a call to the president and the vice president of the local and said, guys, I really would like an opportunity to give you my credentials. And I haven't heard back.
Yeah, well, that is kind of surprising. I know I've been on the GAE board locally, and typically everybody, even Republicans, get to sit in front of the GAE and, you know, get ask questions. I mean, that candidate may be, you know, vouchers, 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 and all kind of other things. And we still will listen to them before we make our endorsement. Tim, I know you're a union member. What's your experience there?
Well, yeah, it is a little odd the way this happened. I'm a little surprised at that. Generally, union boards like to talk to all of the candidates, especially if they're leaning toward one party with multiple candidates in it. So it's a little surprising.
Yes. Catherine, any thoughts there?
Well, no, I'm surprised, too, and I think, you know, I congratulate you for inquiring about it, Dale, because it does sound a little, well, it's also awfully early. You know.
Yeah, and, you know, and I've placed some calls to Richard Ray, and you guys know Richard's director of the AFL-CIO, and I was assured that the AFL-CIO and the larger body of union governance, they're not going to be making these endorsements without bringing people before panels and boards and really letting the candidates talk about their union experiences or the kind of laws that we'd like to see passed, like the Employee Free Choice Act. I mean, I'm a big believer in that. And again, I don't want to take anything away from Rand. I know he's working hard, and I know he believes in unions and believes in the in collective bargaining. And so my hat's off to Rand, but doggone, you know, I just hope that we can do this in a little bit more open fashion in the future.
Yes. Well, Dale, keep us abreast of what's going on with the debate status. And I tell you, I'm sure that this debate would be better off in a live setting in DeKalb County. But if you need 7 o'clock on Sunday on the Kudzu Vine, we'll be your forum for the debate if Mr. Jones wanted that as his setting.
Well, that would be great, David and Tim. We know that Vernon, you guys basically broke the news when Vernon acknowledged that he had voted for President Bush. And so I actually have directed people to your website because I think people need to hear it with their own ears in Vernon's own voice because he makes a defense of it, and people need to hear what he says.
Okay. Well, thank you again for coming on with us.
Good deal.
Thanks, Bill.
Thank you all.
Good luck.
Thanks.
Okay. And, David, we're going to go right into our next guest.
Excellent. Randy, you there with us?
I'm here.
All right. Well, Randy, you're the age. You're the congressional candidate there in Mississippi. I think you'll tell us a little about your district, but I believe it's suburban Jackson might be the quick way to explain it.
Well, I wish it was that easy. It goes all the way from Starkville, which is about 30 miles west of Columbus, southwest down to Natchez, which borders the Mississippi River and the Louisiana border. The majority of the district is a very rural district. We have suburbia. Jackson is a major area with Brandon, Madison, those areas. Meridian is another major city in my district. And, of course, Natchez is probably the third largest city in the district.
Yes, the Starkville, Mississippi State there.
That's correct. Big Bulldog, big Bulldog fans around here.
Yes, yeah, some good collegiate actors most likely there too, so that won't be a bad thing for you.
Right.
Well, I guess let's back up a little bit. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm a Democrat. I think it's time that someone stands up for the people here in the 3rd District and do what's right for the working class. I was raised to do what's right to everyone, regardless of their race, their class, or socioeconomic status, and that's what I plan to do as a congressman. I graduated from the Virginia Military Institute in 1999 with a degree in history. I have a degree from the University of Tennessee in economics, and I just recently graduated from law school, and I finished the bar exam this past week here in Mississippi.
Yes, with your election coming up so soon, We were talking about having you earlier, but you had told us that Monday was the start of the bar for you to hold off another week, so we tried to help you out there.
Well, I sure do appreciate that. It's kind of stressful those few days before the bar exam, and you have to kind of prepare yourself mentally to take that thing and not be interrupted with any other things that can cause you to not concentrate on the bar, so I do appreciate that.
Yes. Well, I guess tell us some of your key issues that you're running on.
Well, I think the main key issue that we face today is the economy and education. Today, I mean, we're seeing foreclosures are on the rise. People are in jobs that are providing stagnant wages with little or no benefits, and American jobs or American corporations are moving jobs overseas. It's now time that we turn around and invest in America. For far too long, and especially during the Republican Congress and the Bush administration, we've been sending the American dollar to foreign countries, and we've neglected the American people. And now is the time to stand up for the American people and put money back in the pockets of the American workforce. And until we do that, we're not going to see any sort of turnaround in our economy. That's the first issue that I always hear when I talk to people. Secondly, education is a big issue here in Mississippi. Mississippi consistently ranks 47th or 48th in per pupil spending per student. We have to increase that amount of money going per student. My proposal and what I will try to do for the state of Mississippi, Mississippi spends approximately $6,300 per pupil right now. The average across America is $8,800. I will propose legislation in Congress that we need to take that difference of about $2,500, and the federal government needs to pump that money into Mississippi so that Mississippi can be spending the national average per pupil. And if we increase education and the benefits that children receive out of education, it will stop this perpetuation of poverty that we have today. Children will be educated, they will go on to college, they will get a good job that pays well and provides good benefits, and everything will, in the long run, will be better for the state of Mississippi. It's a long-term solution, but it's a solution that we have to work on now.
Yes. Catherine, you got any questions for Randy?
Well, yeah, I've taken a little bit of a look at your website, and And I applaud you for stepping forward and running for office. I have a great deal of admiration for people who do that, and so
well, thank you.
Accept that. I'm curious. I noticed on your website that you talk a little bit about bringing jobs to Mississippi, and with your emphasis on education and getting people trained to do these jobs. What kind of jobs are you trying? Will you hope to bring to Mississippi? And what is your plan to do that?
Well, what we have to do here in the 3rd District, we have to decide what sort of industry we want to bring to this district. The 1st District is having a new Toyota plant come in. So now you can say that they're concentrating on the auto industry and manufacturing industry. Also in Canton, they have the Nissan plant. We have to decide, do we want to be a manufacturing-type industry? Do we want to be a farming industry? What do we want to do? Do we want to be aircraft technology? There's plenty of things that we can do, but we have to decide what we want to do. We have to train our people for those types of jobs. That way, when these corporations are looking for places to go, they know that they can come to the 3rd District of Mississippi and get quality, trained employees ready to go on the day that their corporations open. And until we do that, corporations do not want to come into a district where they have to spend hundreds of thousands and millions of dollars to provide education to the workforce to get them up to speed as to what they need to be. We need to have people lined up ready to go to work in any sort of workforce that wants to come into this district. And so we need to take a proactive approach with our community colleges and determine how they can help provide the workforce training to people that can get them trained for these highly specialized jobs that are now out there. We cannot just rely on skilled labor anymore. People have to have technical expertise in order to compete in today's global market. And until we do that, nothing is going to change in the 3rd District as far as bringing manufacturing businesses or any other type of industry into this district.
Yes, you mentioned that Nissan plant, if I'm not mistaken, when that opened earlier this decade, that was the only car plant in the entire nation to open during that year, and that was pretty much under the leadership of Ronnie Musgrove, who his administration completely spearheaded that. And I guess he's running on the ticket, if you will, that you are, the Democratic ticket, as y'all's Senate nominee.
Right, that's correct. Well, and that's not going to be a party-affiliated ticket due to the fact it's considered a special election, but I would assume that he would be leaning toward the Democratic side on his issues.
Yes, and I would have a feeling that the NRCC will be, or NRSC will be funding Roger Wicker, and the Democratic Senatorial Committee will be funding Ronnie Musgrove, to a point. I mean, obviously,
right,
won't fund the whole race, just pitch in here and there.
Well, I assume that the Republicans will dump every dollar that they can to make sure that they don't lose a Senate seat, and I think they're going to throw every dollar they can at me to make sure that they don't lose the 3rd Congressional District. Because the 1st District right now looks like it will go to a Democrat. That means we'll have 3 out of 4 of the congressional seats as Democrats. And then if I can win the third district, that would mean every congressman from Mississippi is a Democrat, and hopefully we can do things for the people.
Yeah. What kind of indications are you getting from the national party and different groups outside of your district?
Well, I haven't had an opportunity really to explore many opportunities with the National Party, basically because of my limited schedule. Now, I have talked to people at the DNCC, and, you know, it's early preliminary. The 3rd District, what they look at is typically the past presidential election. So in 2004, 65% of this district voted for George Bush. They really don't like to throw money into a district that is that red. They don't feel like that one can compete against the Republican machine in a district like that. If it were a little bit closer, maybe 55% to 45% in 2004, I would have a better opportunity to gain the support that I need from the DNCC.
Now, you do have DNC staff in Mississippi now, though, right?
Right, we do.
Field workers, are they helping you?
Right now, what they are doing, they really cannot get involved in the primary.
Right.
So they've taken a hands-off approach. They will, you know, if I call in and ask for anything, if I need any information, they'll lead me in the right direction. You know, they've been excellent as far as that goes. But, you know,
well,
they're not
that's
going to come,
understandable.
They're not going to come out and support, you know, either myself or Mr. Gill.
Yes. Well, I guess I'll let Tim. Have any questions for Mr. E?
Yes, sir, I do. You made some allusion to the 2004 presidential race, and you yourself are running in a presidential election year. And might I say, at least in my lifetime, my memory, it's the most unique presidential race I ever recall. So my question is, how do you figure the presidential race will affect down-ballot races like yours in the state of Mississippi this year?
I think it's going to have a tremendous impact for any Democratic candidate on the ticket. No matter who's at the top of the ticket, whether it's Obama or whether it's Clinton, people are excited about having a Democrat back in the White House. I think they're going to come out and vote, and they're going to do everything that they can to put Democratic leadership back in Congress and back in the Senate and back in the White House. I'm getting that feeling everywhere. My district is such a Republican district. Anytime I'm meeting people, more than likely it's a Republican, and a lot of Republicans are fed up with Republicans right now. They're tired of what they've done, they're tired of what they're saying, and they're tired of what they're not doing. And a lot of people are having a hard time choosing whether they're going to vote for McCain or whether they're going to come over to the Democratic side. And I think some will, you know, cross the line and vote Democrat in this upcoming election.
Yeah. Well,
it certainly helps that you've got a nice, lively JJ dinner coming up. That's really great.
Yeah, that'll be great. Senator Obama and Senator Clinton have been invited to speak. I don't think anyone has made a confirmation that they will be here. I'm sure a lot will be determined on Tuesday after the Texas and Ohio primaries. Assuming Clinton wins 1 out of 2 or 2 out of 2, I would assume both will be here. I don't know what she will do if she loses both states, but I think you could probably safely say that her chances of winning the nomination would be slim to none at that point. So she would probably not show up here in Mississippi.
But even with one presidential candidate, I would assume that the dinner would get well more than the 300 people that attended last time. John Leak told us about.
Right. I spoke with the Democratic Party on Friday. And they said tickets are selling tremendously fast. They can't keep up with the orders. So it's, you know, it's an exciting event for the people here in Mississippi.
I got to tell you that this is very exciting, you know, for sitting here over here in the blue spot in a deep red state to hear that another deep red state is going blue or may go blue. It's very exciting. And we're so glad that people like you are stepping up to, you know, run for those seats.
Well, I think what the problem that the Republicans are seeing, the Republican Party is always playing to the fears of people, and they're tired of hearing about that. They want to hear people talk about the issues that affect them every single day. And until someone comes out and talks about those issues and just has a solution for those issues, they're really not interested anymore. Fear-mongering may have worked back in 2004 during George Bush and the Kerry campaign. People were still a little bit afraid of 9/11. Nowadays, people's pocketbooks they have less money in their pocketbooks. Gas prices are skyrocketing. Health insurance costs are going through the roof. And they are truly concerned about their family and how they're going to survive the next several years. And until someone comes up with a solution for the problems that these people are facing, I don't think they want to hear any more about war or the war on terror or the possibility of being attacked. I think they want to know how the American government can turn around and serve them for once.
Yes. Well, I'm going to ask you what's going to sound like a dumb question, but I heard there was a really big Republican congressional debate in your district in the past week or so. Did you attend that?
No, I did not.
Okay. I'd heard that other candidates in a primary did, so that's why I asked that question.
Right.
And also, just before the show, we were informed about a YouTube video you had put on the air. We had not seen that yet. I guess I didn't see it linked to your site, although I may have overlooked it. What's that YouTube debate we've heard about?
Well, it's a video that I posted yesterday. Mr. Gill, my Democratic opponent, attended a Republican-sponsored event in Lawrence County this past week. WLBT News posed a question to all the candidates, how can we prevent a recession? Mr. Gill's response was, and I'm paraphrasing, that we needed to provide a more favorable business environment to big business. And under the Bush administration and the Republican Congress, big business could not have gotten a more favorable environment. And I don't know how we can become any more favorable to big business except put CEOs in the White House and in Congress. That's the only way we can become more favorable than what we are right now. And now is the time that we stand up to big business and we say, now look, it's the government is for the people and by the people. We're not here to serve big business interests. I'm here to protect the people, and that's what I'm going to do. And if the big business has to suffer a little bit because I'm going to protect the people, so be it. But it's time that big business quit running over the American people. And I just made a response to Mr. Gill's response to that question. That's the gist of the video.
Yeah, so it's based on the issues, not a personal attack, just a difference in
philosophy, possibly. Mr. Gill is an extremely nice guy. You know, I buy him dinner. I don't have a problem with him personally at all. An election process is about discussing the differences between the candidates and the issues and the solutions that each people have, and that's all I'm doing. I'm pointing to an issue that he brought up, and I'm just saying I don't think that's the best solution to prevent a recession. Unfortunately, we're already in a recession. You can ask anyone that's lost their home to a foreclosure, anyone that's lost their job to overseas, or anyone that has a low-paying job with no benefits. They'll tell you we're in a recession. They're telling you that they can't save any money to pay for anything nowadays. So something has to give, and unfortunately, the working middle class, they've given all that they can give, and now the American economy is suffering because of that.
Yes. Well, and just to let everybody know that's listening, Mr. Gill has requested an interview with our show, and we're going to grant him that next week to then tell his side of things, and that's good. That's about open democratic debate, and that's what we want. Well, Mr. Heath, I guess before I let you go, if anybody wants to get involved with your campaign, what's the best way they can do that?
The best way they can do it is send me an email at Randy, R-A-N-D-Y, at EADS for Congress. That's E-A-D as in dog, S for Congress.com. I'll respond to you almost immediately if I have my wireless working and I can get to my computer. So that's the best and quickest way to get in touch with me.
Yeah, so that sounds good. And so we'll get involved, and then I guess you've got to do a little get out the vote campaign in between now and the 11th.
That's
of course, it's a two-step process.
Right. I also have a MySpace page that people can go to. It's myspace.com/EADSforCongress. I'd appreciate everybody signing up and being one of my friends and discussing their ideas on MySpace as well. So that's another way that people can contact me in the future.
Okay, well, thanks for coming on in, Randy, and tell us about your campaign.
Well, I sure do appreciate you all taking the time to talk to us. If you have any questions in the future, please don't hesitate to get in touch with me. I'll be more than happy to answer any questions.
Sure thing. Well, another great congressional interview. We're starting to have candidates from across the South come on in and talk with us. Well, I guess we're going to have a little more time before our last caller this evening, and there's two big issues in the state that I think we have to talk about, and I just don't know which one to pick. Catherine, I'm going to let you pick. Should we talk more about the voter file issue that came up, or should we talk about probably the death knell of the Glenn tax?
Oh, I think we should talk about the Glenn tax.
Okay. That's fine. It's always a popular topic. Well, let's have the double whammy, the left-right combination, which I'm very proud of the left combination there, the left side of that. All Democratic Senate and House members stood together saying that they would all, as an entire party, oppose the Glenn tax. Now, technically, pretty much without any Democratic votes, knowing that it needed, a two-thirds majority to pass to be on the ballot, that was pretty much technically the end of the Glenn tax. But to make it even better, Grover Norquist, one of the stalwarts of the right wing of the Republican Party, the head of this group escapes me.
Americans
Kim, you know,
for Tax Reform, I think it's called.
And there may be even another name to it. But he, Tim? Okay. Well, but he came out and said that he thought the people would just be totally shocked by all these new taxes, even if they were taking taxes off property, that people, waking up and getting all these new taxes on services, taxes back on groceries to make up for it would just really not be good government. So you know, that's probably going to mean that a lot of Republicans and, you know, Glenn Richardson's own party now are going to feel they have the political cover to oppose it as well. So I would think this thing is DOA, if you will.
Well, yeah, can we sing Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead right now?
Yes, I mean, this may be the most sweeping, attention-grabbing proposal in at least my Georgia political history that just never even made it out of committee after being such a to-do. I mean, this has been about a year we've been hearing about this thing.
Well, and I think it's really interesting because I was afraid that if this, you know, worked in Georgia, that they'd try it, you know, across the country, because that seems to be what they do. You know, we're the little petri dish for the Republican, you know, policies. And for this to just fall flat like this, especially with, you know, the help of Mr. Norquist, I think is very refreshing and makes me very happy.
We have another caller coming on here, Dave.
Yes. Welcome, caller.
Hello, this is Gunnar Hall with the Bill Gillespie Campaign. How are you?
Excellent. Gunnar,
Gunnar,
expecting you soon, so this works out good. Well, Gunnar, you actually shot the video, and we'll kind of set it up for the – well, actually, we'll let you set it up for the people, since you're more familiar with it than any of the three of us.
Okay.
There was a big appearance by Congressman Kingston. Got a lot of national attention, but there was a little hypocrisy in it. Set us up.
Sure, sure. Apparently, last Friday on the Bill Maher show on HBO, Congressman Kingston pretty much did what he does best, which is just spew Republican talking points when prompted to do so. And he was talking about Senator Obama not wearing an American flag lapel pin. And so his reasoning was that since he doesn't wear the flag pin, he must be unpatriotic and un-American. So there's a little banter back and forth about that. And then the following week, he was on the Dan Abrams report on MSNBC and basically was saying the same thing. And the beauty of that one, which they didn't catch on Bill Maher, is that even when he was lambasting someone for not wearing an American flag lapel pin, he himself wasn't wearing one. And if you go to YouTube and check out that video, when Dan Abrams called him on it, he really had nothing to say. I mean, he could not. Just a slip-up, I guess, on his part. And his reply was, well, I do wear one, and I could wear one. And so we had heard through the grapevine that Congressman Kingston was, after, you know, the week of showboating around the national talk shows, that he was coming back to Savannah to give a speech at a local function here. So I said, you know what? Knowing this guy and knowing what he's about, I guarantee you he's not wearing one right now. So I went and I grabbed my video camera and headed down there, and sure enough, it wasn't there. And so we made the video pretty much not so much to say, well, he's unpatriotic, but it was more so just to point out the hypocrisy that this guy, you know, he speaks out of one mouth and then does something completely different of what he says. So it looks like that message definitely got across the internets, I guess. The video's been on Friday night, somewhere around midnight we posted it. And today, last I checked, we've had over 9,000 people look at it.
Oh, my goodness. That's amazing, Gunnar.
Yeah, I mean, it's wow. Pretty much, I'm not good at math, but that's somewhere about, like, 200 people an hour, I'm guessing.
And yes, I only looked at it once, I promise. I didn't
okay.
Try to run your numbers up.
No problem.
I've seen it once, too, so I think that's probably, you know, it's probably less than 9,000 people, but I'd say well over 8,500
sure.
People have viewed it. So, yeah, that's awesome, because then, of course, people are going to start to see, hey, who's this Bill Gillespie guy? Let's see the contrast. Oh, let's donate. Let's join the email list. Other things. So that's
yeah, you know, I'm glad you brought that up. There has been, and, you know, we didn't do this as a fundraising stunt or anything like that. We just really wanted to show here's a great example that made national news of Congressman Kingston, you know, displaying his hypocrisy. And so when that got out, all of a sudden we were seen through Act Blue. We're seeing donations come in, I mean, literally from Brooklyn, New York to Omaha, I mean, across the gamut. So, I mean, it was, that was the end result of that was very unintended, but very welcoming all at the same time.
No, no, good. You didn't set this up as a stunt. You're happening to run against the political evil Knievel. He set up the ramp.
Oh, yeah.
And he drove the motorcycle into
the
Shark Tank.
There you go. There
you
go.
Follow
that
guy around with a video camera and get one of those gaffes any day.
Yeah, well, you know what? We were talking about that, and the problem with that is that in the one speech that he gave, that was just one example. I mean, every other sentence that comes out of his mouth is a potential other video. So
I saw the Bill Maher show. Did anybody else see it? I saw it.
I did not, actually. I was working when that was on, so
I did not get to see it. And I TiVo that show every week. And he didn't just talk about the flag. He talked about this, like, myth that that Senator Obama won't say the Pledge of Allegiance, which is a myth. I mean, I've seen YouTube videos of him leading a large group of people in the Pledge of Allegiance. So, but he really looked like a fool on Bill Maher, too. I mean, he just was rambling about, you know, how unpatriotic Senator Obama was. But the flag pin, I noticed when I was watching, I was like, well, why isn't Maher pointing out that he doesn't have one on, but he didn't do it?
Yeah, I was surprised. Bill Maher's a pretty sharp guy. I'm surprised he didn't pick up on that myself.
Well, but, you know, he has Kingston on a lot.
Sure, absolutely.
He likes Kingston. I mean, the guy is fun to have on because he always makes a fool of himself.
Yeah, very, very true. And, I mean, it brings back to the point. I mean, we're still editing out, you know, different quotes from that one speech that he gave that we could use for potential videos. So if we did follow him around, I mean, we'd be bogged down with just editing stupid gaffes from Congressman Kingston.
Well, the Georgia delegation seems to be good at this on national shows. Like, I remember the Two Commandments, maybe Three Commandments. How many commandments did Westmoreland actually know?
That was great.
And there's more than just that. There's other folks, too. But it just seems to be these guys need to stay away from these national comedy/political shows. It's just not a good format for them.
Well, we had the king of
Colbert once, and he made a fool of himself too.
And we had the king of that up here, David, when we had Bob Barr as the controller.
You know, and I feel really bad for Georgians in that instance. You know, when you take a look at our Republican delegation for Congress, you know, there's no more statesmen involved. You know, before, if you were a congressman from Georgia, you did what was good for Georgia, but now it seems like they only do what's good for the Republican Party. And they only give their talking points out, and that's it. So it really disheartens me, and I know that the voters of the 1st Congressional District are picking up on it, too. I mean, we'll go to forums like probably the one that Bill was at tonight, little meet and greets or just saying hi, and we have voters all the time saying, you know, I'm a Republican, but I just can't do it this time around. I can't vote Republican. They've just completely disappointed me. So I think they can't campaign on their own issues, and they can't use the fear issue anymore, so they have to resort to silly little tactics like this.
Yes, I mean, if you looked at all 15 people we send up there, I mean, you probably would only put one in the, like, wow, you know, giant politics category, that being John Lewis. Then you'd have a few more you put solid, but then we do have a good handful of the lower end that are just really embarrassing at times, like Westmoreland and Kingston. Yeah, well, I guess since we got you on the line then, tell us some more things going on in the first with Bill Gillespie's campaign.
Well, you know, Bill, we're doing meet and greets all over the district. It's very welcoming now. A lot of them were in the beginning, were Savannah-focused, but now we're getting calls from all over the district. We had one in Camden County, you know, a week and a half ago. We've got another one coming up on some of the islands, Jekyll Island, so It's a really good campaign. It's definitely a grassroots movement, you know. He wanted to know if he could write off the mileage on his car that he's putting on, because we've estimated about 200,000 miles, we think. So it's that'll just go to show how much traveling he's been doing, shaking hands and talking to folks.
And now, Gunnar, is your fundraiser this week?
Yes.
On Thursday, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so everybody who's listening, if you can't go to the fundraiser, just go to the website and, you know, 10, 15, 25, or, you know, 100 or 150, whatever.
Absolutely. The website
help us get Kingston out of there.
Absolutely. The website is billforgeorgia.com, by the way. And we will be having, you know, we were in the midst of planning some weekend events, so you Atlanta folks that want to come spend some time at the beach can come on down and have a good event all in the same weekend.
Door-to-door in St. Simon's, Jekyll, Tybee Island.
There you go.
Like a good time for summer.
Gunner saying that because I specifically requested a weekend fundraiser so we can come down to the beach.
Yes, well, Gunner, thanks for coming on and letting us know more about your video work.
Well, thanks for having us. Thanks for having the campaign on the phone. We definitely appreciate it. This is a great show, so we definitely come back anytime we're invited.
Okay, thanks again.
Thank you.
Yes. Well, while we're plugging events, before we get to the next show and the outrage of the week, I do want to let everybody know, if you wanted to do delegate training and you haven't had a chance yet, the final delegate training is going to be March 8th at 9 o'clock at the Cobb Parkway Piccadilly Cafeteria. It's in conjunction with the Cobb Democrats Breakfast. It will be for the 11th district, and that'll be the final time. I certainly hope someone from the DPG attends and gives us some great materials, because I know some, but there's more about technically that I'll need help with, but that will be the final time for folks throughout the state to come to get one of the trainings. But I guess right before we do the outrage, we've probably got just a little bit of time to talk about this voter file situation. Catherine, why don't you set us up here?
Well, the way I understand it is the Democratic Party of Georgia has made an announcement or a decision to not sell the voter file to challengers to sitting or incumbent Democrats. In the past, it has been available for a fee, obviously, and I haven't seen any like press release or official thing. It's something that has been, you know, kind of cruising around the blogs. I'm pretty confident that it's true. I have heard from some good sources that it was a decision that was made by party leadership. I do not believe that it was run through the executive committee, and it was certainly not run through the state committee members.
I can tell you, unless it was run through this afternoon's 5:30 conference call, and it was, well, actually, that wasn't the executive committee. That was the congressional chairs. So I can tell you it was not run through the executive committee. Additionally, I'll say something I found very interesting. Andre broke the story on his blog, Georgia Politics Unfiltered, so we need to give him credit. But Melanie did an extended post on it as well on Blog for Democracy. In the comments, Chris Huffman basically disagreed with the policy as well. And you got to think, Chris worked at the party under Bobby Kahn, and he works with Bobby Kahn now. So you have to think that's very interesting that that Chris, who works right there with Bobby, came out and repudiated that policy. So that means the former administration, in some form or fashion, has criticized this policy.
Well, it's a troublesome policy for a number of reasons, at least as far as I'm concerned. As a donor to the party, it concerns me that we're, you know, turning away revenue at a time when we are going to need it. With
Amen.
The 2008 election coming, we're going to need all the money we can gather, and we haven't been as proficient at fundraising as we could be. And you know, that's you know, I'm not placing any blame on anyone, but this is an opportunity to raise money, as well. A good, you know, like you and I spoke earlier, David. Good government requires that we have an open, leave the opportunities open for people to challenge sitting incumbents, whether they're Democrats or Republicans. And I think it's a hazardous path myself.
Yes, and obviously we can make examples on both sides. I mean, we can talk about the need. It's the right thing to do no matter what. But when a Hank Johnson or Denise Majette challenges Cynthia McKinney, a lot of folks in the Democratic Party, a majority, if you will, said that's a good thing to do, and I believe it improved our party. Now, of course, you have, you know, Markell Hutchins challenging John Lewis. I'd argue that that's not really the right direction to go in, but does Markell Hutchins have the right to have a fair shot by getting voters' names? I believe he does.
I believe
but
he does, too. And the other piece of this that is really important is that we need all the information we can get about voters. And the more campaigns and individuals who are working on that voter file, the better the party is. It builds our party. And that's what we should be focused on. That's what the Democratic Party of Georgia should be focused on, in my opinion.
Yes, I mean, we've had governors being sitting and had people running against them. You know, Zell Miller had Jim Boyd run against him, and I don't think they blocked Jim Boyd out. I mean, they didn't bend over backwards to help Big Jim. Rest in peace, by the way. I don't think we mentioned on the show, but he's passed away in the past month. But, you know, that was a situation where you didn't have a candidate you really wanted running, but he had the right to run, and you didn't go out of your way to harm him. You just didn't necessarily help him, if you will.
Well, David, let me jump in with a question, and we talked about this before we went on the air tonight. We'll be doing qualifying in our county up here, and we always encourage all the candidates we can get. We think that helps the system. What if we were to hold qualifying and 10 people were to come to say they wanted to run for county commissioner, and the only person's money we accepted was the incumbent? How would the state party react to that?
Well, you would be blocking access. I believe actually the Secretary of State's office would have problems, and that's, you know, I guess.
Well, then what's the state party doing here?
Makes me wonder. I mean, it seems like this is something we'd have to vote on. I'm sure something's going to get mentioned very soon about this. It just does. It sounds like it's something that was made at the caucus level more so than the state party level. The state party went along with it, but. And also, the DNC is paying for a lot of this. I wonder if the DNC is okay with this policy.
Yeah, because the DNC really wants that voter file beefed up.
And why didn't somebody let the executive committee in on this little gem?
Yes, I don't know, because we've never talked about the specific issue, but I can't imagine that body saying that, a majority of that body saying that this is a fair policy. Just sitting in the room with them and hearing other discussions about access. It just would be surprising to me if that was the case. Well, I guess we're in the last 9 minutes of the show, and we usually need to give Tim an adequate amount of time. Tim, give us your outrage.
Okay, David, and this is a rather timely outrage I'm doing this week, because we've already talked a little bit about this in an earlier segment. On February 22nd, serial guest Jack Kingston made what seemed like his 100th appearance on Bill Maher's show. Personally, I have no idea why Maher keeps inviting this guy on, but that's his business, I guess. At any rate, the conversation, of course, turned to the presidential race. And then Kingston's shenanigans began in earnest. He first attacked Michelle Obama for what she had said. Now, for all of you that don't remember that, she said, "I'm really proud of my country for the first time in my adult life." She did this on February 18th and then explained in detail what she meant on February the 20th. Now, the interesting thing about this is that Kingston appeared on Maher's show 2 days after her explanation and said she had failed to explain what she meant, which means that he purposely lied on national television. But then that wasn't all of it. He then said, "When you combine this with the fact that the guy would not say the Pledge of Allegiance and won't put an American lapel pin on his coat, that's things voters are watching." And he capped it off by saying that, quote, "We need to know where Obama stands on America." Now, there he lied again. He mentioned that Obama wouldn't say the Pledge of Allegiance, and he was making allusion to a picture that we've all seen of Obama, Hillary Clinton, and Bill Richardson. The picture showed Clinton and Richardson with their hands over their heart, and Obama with his hands clasped in front of him. Now, the only thing, they were listening to the national anthem, and they were not saying the Pledge of Allegiance. To compound things, Kingston went on MSNBC and told Dan Abrams the same junk, almost word for word. And guess what, boys and girls, as we mentioned earlier, Kingston wasn't wearing a flag pin himself. Also, if anyone is interested, as we've said, there are a bunch of Obama YouTube videos on the internet that deal with this. Know what he's doing on those? You guessed it. He's saying the Pledge of Allegiance at public events. Well, first, they attacked his name. Then they attacked his religion. Then they questioned his patriotism. Now I notice they're accusing him of supporting infanticide. Anything except the issues, right, Jack Kingston? there's a genuine war hero running against Kingston in the 1st District. I wish him well. Jack Kingston is nothing but a little attack dog, and the word change has him shaking in his shoes, David.
Well, thank you, Tim. And I guess it's shocking, but we have not talked really any about the presidential race other than briefly talk about how it affects Randy Eads' race. So I guess in our final minutes, it may be a time for predictions. You know how we love predictions. There's 4 primaries coming up on Tuesday, Rhode Island, Texas, Ohio, and Vermont. Catherine or Tim, y'all want to go first? Or if y'all want to, I can.
You go first.
I'll tell you what. We did lots of predictions on Super Bowl Sunday, and I didn't have the guts to pick the Giants, even though I was rooting for them and had a little inkling that they were going to do better than I thought. So I'm going to have the guts tonight. I think I'm going to go in order. I think Barack Obama will have the biggest win in Vermont and will win by the biggest margin. But I think Hillary Clinton will win by double digits in Rhode Island. I think Ohio she'll win by a larger single-digit number. And I think she'll win by a very few single-digit number in Texas. And what that means is she'll win 3 out of 4, and this thing will be a race again. Catherine or Tim?
Go ahead, Tim.
Well, I'm going to disagree on one. I believe that Barack Obama is going to win Texas. It looks like the trend has set in there. He's pulled a little bit ahead in the polls. And unless there's just a massive turnout of Hispanics and she gets more of that vote than I think she's going to get, she's going to lose there, but I think you're right on the other 3, David.
Okay, Catherine?
I'm going to agree with Tim. I think it's going to be tight in Ohio, though.
Okay, well, I guess so. Insider Advantage will be the only one sending me the check this week. I referenced their poll where they show that Hillary Clinton's ahead, and they touted their other poll in one of the other southern states, South Carolina or Tennessee, as being accurate, more accurate than anybody else's polling. So I don't know. I just get a sense. I think definitely he had a ton of momentum 2 or 3 weeks ago. I heard Paul Begala say what needs to be done is take a timeout, slow this thing down, and it seems to have done that in a way.
I do think his momentum is slowing, absolutely.
I don't want to say her momentum's picking up yet, but it's kind of, it has worked. There was a big break in between the primaries, and it's slowed, and that's, you know, helped Hillary Clinton, I believe.
There's one more thing. In Texas especially, watch a Republican crossover vote. I know they have been talking this up to a white-hot frenzy on the Internet. They're actually wanting this race to go all the way to a brokered convention, and so watch them.
Yes, but the interesting thing will be if she wins 3 out of 4, you got to think about this. If you look at the population states in this country, you throw out New York and Illinois, since it's both their home states, that means if the 10 largest states in America that have held primaries, she'll have won every single one of them except for Georgia. I mean,
that's true.
You know, this is a democracy where the people
live. And that will be her claim to the nomination. His claim will be if he actually has the most delegates.
I mean, because in a Democratic primary, winning California and Florida is going to mean more than winning states like the Dakotas, where there's more sheep than people.
Well, that's true.
So that's just my thought on it. But, yes, I think it's another great show with a lot of guests. Next week, I think we're going to do a little more Mississippi talk, if you will, just previewing. I'm talking to another congressional candidate from Mississippi, and as well, Mr. Gill called in before our show and requested time, so we're going to be fair and let him have his interview next week as well. So more Mississippi talk.
And Mr. Gill, if you are listening, I know you waited patiently on the line for a while. We were sorry we could not work you in this week, and David won't be calling you.
well, and he can eat as I call in. To be fair, we had announced this as Randy each time. Next week we can announce it at his time. I just didn't want to ambush anybody. We'll love debates, But we have to tell both candidates ahead of time we're doing debates. I mean, this is an ambush radio.
Absolutely.
We'll hear if we can get a report from those guys about, from somebody from Mississippi about their JJ dinner, because that's this week, too.
Yes, John Leake may let us know about that as well.
Yeah, because it sounds like, it looks like it's going to be pretty lively.
Sure, okay. Well, another great show. Thank y'all for calling in.
Thank you.
Good night.
Thanks, guys.
Goodbye.